Welcome to Imperfect Momming. Our children are constantly looking to us for examples. The term role model doesn't quite cut it here. We are shaping their worldview with every move we make. You see, it's not in the lectures we give or moments where we are actively attempting to teach them. It's in the micro movements we make, the unconscious ways in which we navigate life. We are constantly teaching our children how to show up for themselves, their friends, their future partners, and even their future children. So what can we do to ensure we are raising thoughtful, compassionate, self-aware human beings? We have to become them ourselves. No one is perfect, but we can still all be better, and it starts with self-healing. Let's get to it.
Welcome back to Imperfect Momming, and our special guest for today is Kelly Winkler. Welcome, Kelly.
Thank you for having me. It's absolutely nice to be here.
Yeah, it's excited to hear what comes up today. So tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. I'm a mom of four, and by trade, I'm an educator. So I was a classroom teacher. And then I was a stay-at-home mom also for many years. And when my oldest daughter was about 12 years old, she was always an anxious kid. So let me rewind a little bit. She was always anxious, but we just didn't know that that's what it was. You know, it was she was my first. So as a new mom, when she was young, she had some behaviors and a hard time separating from me and other things that we just didn't recognize as anxiety. So then when she got into school, a few things came up. She had a few misdiagnoses. They first thought maybe she had ADD, and then they thought maybe she had a seizure disorder because she was sort of not very, very unfocused. And then anyway, when she was 12 years old, her anxiety was through the roof, so much so that she actually stopped going to school for a bit. And so we had this really big struggle, and we had her in therapy, and her therapist recommended that she try a yoga class. So we got her into a tween yoga class, and she just really fell in love with it. She really liked the power that it gave her about how she could feel like she had some control over her body and some control over her thoughts. She really got into meditation, and she's 17, and she still uses meditation all the time. And so when I saw the power that these tools had for her, I just, as an educator, thought, okay, how can I get these to more children? Because had she had this as a toddler, she could have avoided a lot of the struggle that she went through. So at this point, I was back in the classroom at a preschool level. So I started searching up how to teach yoga to kids. I really dove into my own yoga practice at that time and started falling in love with it myself. And then I took a kids yoga training through Kidding Around Yoga and fell in love with it. And sort of that was like the thing that catapulted my next step in my career. So then I started using it in my classroom and started offering some classes locally for kids in my town and after school program, and kids were just loving it. So I slowly worked my way back out of the classroom. And now I am teaching these tools to not only children, but adults. I went back and got my 200-hour yoga teacher certification. I also became a trainer for Kidding Around Yoga, the kids yoga company that I trained with. So now I do workshops for educators, and I work with parents and families to help them utilize these mindfulness and yoga tools to, you know, help things like anxiety and struggles with behavior, but just really sort of connecting the family and having a more calm environment. And then I also have a podcast that talks about these tools as well.
Very cool. And I just have so many things to say about all of that. It's like, I was trying to organize my thoughts, and I was then like, but I can't, cause I'm listening. My son's school does yoga inside the school, and that's one of my favorite things about them is that they include that in their practice. And the first time that I ever heard anybody say I have anxiety, I really was very dismissive of it, because it wasn't something that I had experienced. Mm-hmm. And I think I used to be a lot more dismissive of things than I am now. What's that?
When you don't know what something feels like, it's hard to identify, right?
Right, for sure. And now I understand it a little bit more, at least on a surface level. It's still not something that I've ever had to deal with. Besides the separation anxiety that she was feeling from you, is there anything else, any like tips that for moms that might be wondering, does my daughter have anxiety? Is there anything else that you wanted to share about that?
Yes. I mean, anxiety presents itself different, so many ways. It could be different for everybody. I also had anxiety as a child, although I didn't know that that's what it was, because nobody really talked about it back then. Right. I had more social anxiety. So I struggled to really speak outside my home. My home was my comfort zone. I was comfortable there, of course, speaking to my siblings and my parents, but go outside the home, it was really difficult for me to speak out in public, to speak in school. So that's always, I was always just classified as shy or introverted, but that's can be a sign. You know, I really, really wasn't shy. I just was really nervous to talk. So that can be a sign. It can present that way. Mm-hmm. It could also present as a child who can't sit still and is really hyperactive. So you might think that the child has ADHD, but they maybe just be having these anxious feelings and having this extra anxious energy in their body. And they're moving a lot and fidgeting a lot because they don't know what to do with this energy. So that can be a sign. A sign also, my daughter she would perseverate on things for a long amount of time. So if she experienced something that made her nervous, for instance, we had on Halloween when she was just under two, a boy came to our door and had a scary mask on and said boo when we opened the door. Now, of course, that's scary for all toddlers, right? So she cried and I settled her down. And most toddlers would just maybe get over it. Maybe the next day or so, they might be nervous. Or if they see a mask, they might be nervous. But for about a year and a half, she asked me every day if is somebody going to be wearing a mask, is what she was asking me. So she just couldn't let go of that scary experience. So that's something that, like, we have intrusive thoughts. So if your child is constantly asking for reassurance and asking the same question over and over, many kids are fearful or anxious about thunderstorms. So they may constantly ask you to check the weather and look outside. And if it starts to get a little bit cloudy and dark, they might ask you, you know, is it going to rain? Things like that. So just kind of paying attention and listening to those cues. My daughter would ask me the same questions over and over. And I didn't really know that that was anxiety. I just would keep answering her, keep reassuring her, and just kind of move on with our day. Mm. And then, you know, as we got the diagnosis, we understood that that's where that was coming from. So it really can display in many different forms. My biggest tip would be just to pay attention to your child. And if you see a change in behavior, so if you had a social child and they didn't seem to struggle making friends, and then all of the sudden, you know, now they're seeming a little bit more reserved and they're not being as social, you see that change, then, you know, sort of pay attention to those changes. I think especially now after coming out of COVID, as things are starting to open up, we're going to see a lot of anxiety in our kids. Are they wearing masks, no mask? And, you know, can they be in big groups? Or, you know, so there's going to be a lot of anxiety coming out of this time, I think.
Yeah, I've been thinking about the little ones, like the 3 and 4 year olds that they're aware of the fact that they're wearing a mask and everyone around them is wearing a mask, mm-hmm. but, you know, and they may have forgotten what life was like before masks. And so when masks go away, I don't know that they're going to go away completely, even my mom has said, I'm going to probably wear a mask for the rest of my life going in public because we haven't been sick for a year and it's been amazing. And I'm like, you want to have that like immunity, like, yeah, being sick sucks, but you also want to have a strong immune system, but that's a whole nother topic. But so I have had that thought, like what kind of anxious anxiety I don't know why that's a word that I don't even really like. There's a lot of words I don't like because they're overused.
Yeah.
And like, obviously your daughter has anxiety. Like she's been diagnosed with,
she actually was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder and panic disorder, which are anxiety disorders. They fall under the anxiety disorder umbrella.
Got it.
But yes, you can also just be diagnosed with generalized anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. I hesitate with things that get diagnosed, overly diagnosed, you know, like, and I don't question per se the diagnosis, but, like when little boys have ADHD and right. It's like, but do they have ADHD or do they just need to run around?
Right.
Like, do they need to exercise more, you know, because they have growing bodies.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think definitely some things can be overdiagnosed. The only thing I can say about diagnosis, when my daughter finally got her official diagnosis that we felt was the right diagnosis, it really was sort of like a bittersweet moment for us because it was bitter because I felt a little sad because now she had this diagnosis attached to her. And I knew that it was not, she wasn't in a stage. There was nothing she was going to grow out of. This was a disorder that she had, you know, and so that was going to be a challenge that she had, but it also gave us so many answers and she felt almost a sense of peace because she could understand what was going on in her body. She didn't feel any more like, there was something wrong with her necessarily, like why she couldn't control these thoughts, because now she understood there was something going on in her brain that was causing her to have that. So she felt a little bit less like responsible for the behavior.
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of gave her a sense of peace to know what was going on. So that's like the balance of getting a diagnosis. Sometimes you're right. Things are definitely overdiagnosed, but sometimes it's just the answer that you're looking for. So then you can, you know, start to like find the answers to help you feel better.
Yeah. And I do have a question about her like the questions that she would ask you over and over again. And then I also want to talk about the diagnosis, my son's diagnosis of autism, which is also widely probably overdiagnosed. But so just out of my own curiosity, you sound very patient. Did you lose your mind when she would ask the same question over and over?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it would get very frustrating because, you know, sometimes, you know, life is busy and she had siblings, right? And so there were times where, you know, I had my three other kids and she just wanted me to sit next to her and keep reassuring her. And it was very time consuming. And what I found out later on was that I was actually, by reassuring her in this way, I was actually making it worse. Oh. Because the more they get reassured, then the more they need to keep looking for that reassurance. They almost get, it was like, so with obsessive compulsive disorder, you know, you have obsessions and then you have the compulsions that you do that make you feel better. So if you have an obsession, say about, you know, contamination, so then they may wash their hands a lot. Her obsessions were her thoughts. Mm-hmm. So she had intrusive thoughts. I became her compulsion to ask me over and over, was this true? Is this going to happen? Am I going to be okay? Whatever that perseveration, that thought she was perseverating on, she was coming to me. So I actually became her compulsion. Mm. So that was challenging. So I definitely lost my patience without a doubt. And it took a lot of, you know, but once we got into understanding what was happening. And then we started using these tools of mindfulness and yoga that changed everything for the whole family, because I was able to use the tools for myself, I was able to keep myself regulated and keep my anxiety down, because she would get anxious and I would get anxious. And it was like we were setting each other off. So I was able to keep myself regulated, which then I was able to help co-regulate her until she learned how to regulate herself. So it really was a challenge, but once we found those tools, it was life-changing for us.
Yeah. And so back to the diagnosis conversation, and then we'll talk more about yoga. And when my son got his diagnosis, I had that exact same bittersweet feeling that you described, where it's like, okay, well, now he has a diagnosis. Oh man. and then also like, oh, okay. So we have, now I can and start to really understand what's more of what's going on inside of him. You know, just autism is maybe a little bit different. Because you've heard this saying, if you've met one child with autism, you've met one child with autism, like it affects them differently. So even now, I don't really know what things he does are because of his autism. But like the other day, my sister's the autism expert. She has her master's degree in child development with an emphasis in autism. And so she kind of put me on the path, and we, you know, went to early intervention and all that kind of fun stuff. And, you know, the other day we were, after 4 hours of swimming, my son and I kind of got into this verbal battle where I didn't understand what he was trying to say to me. Mm-hmm. And my sister said his brain is currently, that's the autism thing, and his brain is on a path right now, and you may never understand what he's trying to say, and you're not going to change his mind either. Right. I'm like, all right, and she said, all you can do in this moment is give him clear instructions about what you want him to do and leave it at that. And I mean, I still don't understand what the argument was, but I don't know all the things that he does because of autism, or what he does just because he's a 9-year-old, and what he does because, you know, it's like, I don't know enough to be able to pinpoint it, but, yeah. So that's my,
I think that's like a really powerful point, because so often our kids, even kids without diagnoses, so often have behaviors, and we don't really necessarily quite understand like why they're having that behavior. Right. And a lot of times we just want to squash the behavior, like, you know, okay, it's time to, you know, get out of the pool, and, you know, they don't want to get out of the pool, and they're whatever the thing might be. Mm-hmm. And instead of just trying to figure out the behavior, sometimes we have to try to look a little deeper and see, well, what's going on? Maybe they don't want to get out of the pool because they know it's bedtime, and maybe they get anxious at bedtime. Mm. So maybe they don't want to get out of the pool because then they know they're leaving their friend's house, and they have a hard time, you know, leaving, you know, the friend or whatever that might be. Yeah. So sometimes we have to look a little deeper to see where that behavior is coming from. And that's really, really hard to do when we're frustrated. So that's like, you know, for your sister to be there for you in that moment to say, okay, like he's not gonna change his mind. So you need to just take a step back for a second, take a breath, and make it clear and concise, and don't escalate your emotions, because then you're just, it's just setting each other off again.
What's super interesting about me for some reason is when other people around, I have just the patience of Job. Like I don't lose my temper as quickly as I do when it's just me and him and there's no observers. And that's a lot to do with, you know, I grew up as a pastor's daughter. And so, you know, we get the message really early that we can affect our dad's job. And so we have to act a certain way or, you know, dad could get fired. And so I have control over my behavior a lot more around certain people. Mm-hmm. And I always felt bad about that because I would have a phone call or I would be on the phone with a friend of mine, and she would always praise me for how patient I was with him. And I felt bad because when she's not on the phone, I was at the time, especially I was not patient with him at all. And luckily I've, you know, as I've become a better person, I've become a better parent.
When we know better, we do better, right?
And I laugh just because that's the point of the podcast. But so I'm curious about kids and yoga and their interest in it, because my son will do yoga at school because mm-hmm. that's what everybody's doing at that time. But sure. When I try to do yoga with him at home, he is not interested. So my curiosity is this a normal thing? Is this kids don't like yoga or?
No, actually it's the opposite, depending on how you're approaching it, you know, because yoga, there's a lot to yoga. People think of yoga and you just think of the yoga poses is what everybody thinks of first. And that's just really one small part of yoga is to do what we call the asana or the yoga poses, but really, yoga encompasses mindfulness and meditation and breath work and doing what we call taking yoga off our mat and using kindness and non-harm and all of those things as well. So there's so much to yoga. And so maybe if he doesn't like standing still and doing poses, there's other pieces that you could do. Also, children's yoga is very different than adult yoga. So in an adult yoga class, right, it's quiet. Maybe you have light, you know, gentle music on usually, and it's very slow and moving. But in kids yoga, it's very different. We're oftentimes showing them the opposites. So we may have them do like what we call yoga freeze, where we maybe put on some more upbeat music and have them jump around and dance and move their body in a quick way, and then pause the music and then have them get into a pose and try to be really, really still. So they learn that opposite of I can make my body move and run and jump, and then I can make my body still. Because how often do we tell our kids, calm down, sit down, be still, sit quietly at the dinner table, but we don't necessarily teach them how to do that. That's not something that you just know how to do. That's a skill that you learn to take that energy in your body and then be able to settle that energy and hold yourself still. Yeah. So things like that with breath work, you know, in an adult yoga class, you're going to sit up and sit and maybe put your hand on your chest and your hand on your belly and do some deep breathing, which is absolutely lovely. And some kids will take to that, but maybe, you know, some younger kids, you can do some deep breathing, use bubbles, use pom-poms, those little fuzzy pom-poms to have them blow some pom-poms into a bucket, or pinwheels are great to practice breath. Or just have them use their imagination and pretend that they're blowing up a balloon and ask them, what color balloon do you want to blow up? And kind of like engage them. And they're using the tool, but in a fun and engaging way. So, you know, and then mindfulness, kids are naturally curious and mindful creatures. We just kind of don't let them be that often, right? How many times as a toddler, you're walking maybe to down the street to go to the park and your toddler's stopping every three steps to look at a bug or pick a piece of grass. And we're like, come on, let's go. We're trying to get to the park. Let's keep moving. Mm-hmm. They're being mindful and curious. Mm-hmm. And we don't often encourage that. So part of yoga is just encouraging kids to be mindful, be in the moment, pay attention to their senses. What do things feel like? What do things smell like? What colors do you see? All of that is part of yoga. So there's so many things you can do with your child to engage in that mindfulness practice.
So let's say there's a hypothetical, totally hypothetical, never happened to me whatsoever. engaging in doing homework, and we're frustrated because the homework is not what we want to be doing. and maybe it's a little bit hard. Okay, it's not hypothetical. It's my son.
many houses. You're describing the story of many, many houses.
Yes. I know I'm in good company. But I couldn't keep up the pretense anymore. So this was literally 2 hours ago. And it's a conversation that he and I have had a lot about shifting our mood. Mm. And he knows how to do it. But when I tell him to do it, he says he doesn't know how to do it. Mm. What's something that I can, like a tool that I could use to help him, especially for me when he's in a bad mood? It's really hard for me to stay in a good mood. Sure. Especially if it's ongoing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the energy that we share with people that we're in the room with is absolutely contagious. So, I mean, I think one thing is to just, first of all, name it for him. You know, you're frustrated right now. Like, maybe this homework is hard. You know, you don't want to sit here. You'd rather be playing your video games or outside or whatever you might want to do. I understand you're frustrated. So naming that is really helpful for the first step. And then, you know, maybe it's just getting up from the table for 2 or 3 minutes and doing some physical activity. If he's a really physical kid, maybe that will help, you know, getting up, just having him do some jumping jacks and, you know, move his body in a way to just sort of release that frustration and kind of say that, like, let's get up and just like shake it out and just let it all out, get that frustration out so that we can sit down and, you know, and maybe do 5 questions. And then, you know what, we're going to get up and we're going to do that same thing again. We're going to shake it out, jump around, and then we're going to take a deep breath, sit back down and do a few more questions and kind of go through that process. You know, breath work is really great for helping to change your mood. So you can explain that, like, well, do you feel tired right now that maybe you don't want to do your homework? Do you feel kind of like sluggish and tired? So we can do a breath that will help us get energy. We can do what we call bunny breath. And that looks like, you know, 3 quick sips in our nose and then a nice long exhale. And that gives us energy. But if he's feeling like he has too much energy and he needs to calm down and because he can't sit still, then maybe we want to do, you know, a just nice, slow, deep belly breath with a nice, slow exhale. And that's a calming breath, you know? So, and then maybe he's having trouble concentrating or focusing. You could do a balancing exercise so he could just stand up and stand in tree pose for the count of 10 on each foot. And when we do a balancing pose, it helps to focus us and to help increase our concentration. So it just really depends on what the mood is that you want why is he struggling?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and helping him to name that and then giving him these tools are great, because then when you're not there, he has these tools in his back pocket as well. So.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to have to re-listen and write all that down because I mean, there's instances of all of those things. Sure. And one of the things that we used to do that you just reminded me of is we would take dance breaks. And I would just put on a song that I like and we just dance around to it. And I haven't done that in a long time. So that I appreciate that reminder. Music is
fabulous. Yeah. Even just keeping music on in the background, if it doesn't distract him from his work, you know, is helpful sometimes. I mean, I know I use music when for my 11-year-old, who also he has generalized anxiety, you know, when we're going somewhere, maybe we're on our way to his soccer game and maybe he's feeling anxious, I always just, he has like a select few favorite songs, and that's what we play in the car ride, you know, and it kind of just like gets his mind off of, you know, the nervousness, and he gets into the music. So music's really powerful.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I did suggest to him, we have a big trampoline that he got for his birthday this year. And I said, you know, why don't you take a break and go jump on the trampoline for a few minutes, and you can turn the water on and get your swim trunks on and just go jump. And he wanted me to come with him. And I was I was on my shift at my job, working from home. But so I wasn't able to join him, but I did promise that this evening at 6:30, I will be joining him on the trampoline. Maybe not with the water, but that's just not warm enough for that yet. It was last week, but not this week. So what piece of advice do you want to give to moms?
My best advice is regulate yourself first, take care of yourself first. Remember to take those deep breaths, slow down, and take care of yourself, because taking care of your own mental health is going to help you to show up better for your kids and show up as the parent that you want to show up as. Yeah. So recognize your stress, notice your little cues in your body, notice if you're getting tight up here, or maybe you're clenching your jaw, or maybe you have a headache, whatever those little cues are that your body is sending you that you're feeling stressed. Take notice of it and then do something for yourself, whether that's you wanted to listen, like you pick your favorite song, take a few deep breaths. Maybe you need to move your body. Maybe you just need to sit in 5 minutes of silence, you know, go hide in the bathroom for 5 minutes, as long as everybody's safe, and just sit in silence for 5 minutes, whatever works for you, but take care of you so that you can show up to the interaction with your child the way you want to. You can connect better and be there for them.
Yeah. Everything you just said, absolutely 100%. Like I say all the time, like hiding in the bathroom for 5 minutes is self-care. Absolutely. if that's all you've got. And you know, in this situation, if everybody's kind of activated and you get activated too, and you go step away for 5 minutes, you're going to be a better mom when you come back. You're going to be less, you know, you're going to be less activated.
Yeah, less reactive. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, even just the other day, I got really upset about something. And and I deal with being upset, like I'll start cleaning. If I'm, depending on how mad I am, I'll just start cleaning. And that day that wasn't working. And so I just left the house. Like I thought of a couple of things that I needed to get from the grocery store. And I said, okay, I'm taking off to the store. I need to get some stuff. And I left. And I knew that when I came back that I would be receptive to the apology that I was owed and given 5 minutes right before I left, and I wasn't available for that apology when I received it. But when I left and I came back, I was actually able to receive the apology and apologize for not receiving it earlier. And so it's just, you know, getting to know yourself and figuring out like how to identify those things, the headache, the clenching your teeth, like all of that is really good, good awarenesses.
Yeah. And just one other quick thing. It reminds me also that because we practice these things does not mean we're going to be perfect and we're not going to react, because listen, I'm the first to say I have my moments with my kids. It's a lot sometimes, and there's lots of other stresses going on in our lives aside from the stresses that we have with our kids, right? We have our jobs and we have the household stuff. So it's a lot. So self-compassion, if you react in a way that you wish you hadn't, still take those 2 or 3, 5 minutes, collect yourself, regulate yourself, and then go back and repair with your child. apologize, accept the apology, have the conversation, because nobody's perfect, but we can always repair. We can always come back and say, I didn't react my best. I was feeling a little stressed and I'm sorry. I'm going to try again.
Yeah. That's actually one of my favorite things to do when I lose my mind, when I lose my temper, is explain to him how I'm feeling or how I was feeling and what created the reaction that I had, and that I'm sorry, because that's not how I want to treat him. And it's not how I want him to think it's okay to be treated. You know, and repairing that, you know, quote unquote damage that we've done, because it can be damaging if we don't go back and repair it. Mm-hmm. And I love all that. And how about a book? Is there a personal development or? So
I just finished this book last week, and it is called Soundtracks by John Acuff, A-C-U-F-F. And it is all about our self-talk, the soundtracks that we have going on the back of our minds, whatever those are. Most of the time, we're not even aware of them. We're not even paying attention. Lots of negative self-talk. And he gives you step-by-step how to change those negative soundtracks into positive soundtracks. And I am started with it. I just am 3 days into this process. And so far, I'm loving it. But you stand in front of the mirror every morning and every evening, and you state these positive soundtracks. And it's really, actually, I'm noticing just today, I was driving in the car and I noticed one of them popped up in my head. One of them is, how does it go? It's, I am the only person standing in my way, and I quit doing that yesterday.
Mm.
And this just popped in my head as I was driving, and I was like, wow, this really works. I've just only done it for 3 days, and already they're just starting to come up.
Yeah.
So it's really a great book, and they have the audio version as well. It's great.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out, because I'm aware most of the time of the thoughts that pop up into my head. And earlier today, I was working on how to price my coaching program, or what to price my coaching program. Mm. And there's a lot of negative head talk that can show up when essentially you are the product. Yes. So it's my coaching program, but it's me, you know. Yes. And what there's a lot of like, what am I worth per hour? Well, the most I've ever made per hour is this. What am I, you know, but that was that job. This is this job, you know, and you're trying to, anyway.
I can totally identify with that. Yeah. Absolutely. That hourly fee is challenging.
And I've had this Patreon, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I've had this Patreon website up for probably 3 or 4 days. And for 3 or 4 days that, you know, who would pay for me to do a podcast? Like, why, who would do that? And that website wouldn't exist if there weren't people out there who wanted to support people doing podcasts. Absolutely. So, I mean, yeah, I'm definitely going to have to check out that book. So now, where can our listeners find you?
You can find me on my podcast, which is Mindful Moments for Families and Schools. You can also find me on Instagram at Mindful Moments for Families. And you can find me on Facebook under my original business name, which is Kidding Around Yoga with Kelly.
Mm. That's such a cute name. It made me smile when I heard you say it earlier. Very cute. Well, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate you pouring into our listeners and just being so real and open with, you know, your story and what you've gone through and how you've turned that around to help others. It's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was so fun connecting with you. And thank you for offering up your space to share my story, because it's really a passion of mine. So I always enjoy sharing.
Absolutely. So we will be back with another episode next week. And until then, keep on healing. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Imperfect Mommying. It's time for us to step up and realize that our power is not in trying to shape our children. Our power lies in shaping ourselves into the people we want our children to model themselves after. Don't just do it for your kids. Do it for yourself. When you become a more self-aware, compassionate, and confident person, you and everyone around you benefit. For more information about me and my work, visit alishalyons.com. That's alishalyons.com. See you next time.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.